You're the Word of God the Father. You're the story that makes sense of life. You're the map that can bring direction. You're the Christ at the heart of it all. You're the answer that's not much use unless I can get connected. Having the map doesn't get me anywhere, does it? Unless I get on the tube. And for so many, Christ remains elusively the far side of the barrier. Even when I try, he remains tantalizingly distant. You know, I touch my Oyster card and the gates remain firmly closed. The best I get is that message in red, seek assistance. So let's do that for these last minutes. Seek assistance as we go in search of the pass, the card that will allow me to connect to board. And let's start by taking up those Bibles again, turning back to where we were before, page 1182, and read on as the writer Paul starts to get personal.
Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish, and free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established and firm, not moved from the hope held out in the gospel. This is this gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to every creature under heaven, and of which I, Paul, have become a servant.
Now, what help can this obscure first century group from a city that few of us will ever have visited give us? What assistance can they offer? Well, they do know, don't they, what it is to be on the wrong side of the barrier, to find the gates firmly closed between them and God. You see what he said in verse 21? Once you were alienated from God, enemies in your minds, because of your evil behavior. And we bridle at that. It ignores all the nuances that matter so much to us, the distinctions we treasure. You know, we want to say there's the respectably good, nice person. I think of my friend Andrew, a serious scientist who turned to Christ, and he was being interviewed for his story in church one night, and before the service, someone just went through his story with him, and she came out afterwards and said, "You're no good, Andrew. As far as I can tell, your story is before you were a Christian, you were a very nice person, and now that you've become a Christian, you're just even nicer." There was actually quite a lot of truth in that. Or then there's just the normal, ordinary, selfish. That was probably me, very run-of-the-mill, nothing out of the ordinary to my rebellion. You know, I would pass as one of the crowd. Oh, and then we've got the others, you know, I wouldn't want him in my home type sinner. Ken was a page three photographer. Topless models was his speciality. When he came to Christ, he cut up his photo collection. There were 2,500 of them. When he was baptized, again, they asked him his story in front of the church family. And in fact, his own family and friends were there. He said that was the first time his sister-in-law realized what sort of a photographer he was. As he put it, her face was a picture. Yeah, alienation and enmity come in several different packages. It was real from the lady from the Norfolk County set who came to a dinner at which I explained Christ. And as she left, she very politely shook my hand and said, "Thank you for a lovely evening," as she went home to do absolutely nothing about it. Just as real for her as for the guy off the housing estate, clutching his pint of beer, starting off a question and answer discussion in a packed front room by saying to me, "Well, I suppose I'd better put the boot in first. It's all rubbish to me." And both were out of relationship with God. What's striking, though, is what comes next. You see, we're expecting to be told to change, to make up for things, to earn it, to put some money on the Oyster card if we want to connect. But it all misses the point. The actual first responsibility isn't really with us. Well, when I lived in the East End, right next to us was a Barnardo's home. It was a home for a kind of foster home for kids. For one reason or another, parents couldn't look after them. And it was a bit of a last chance saloon for them. They were dropping out of the system at pretty much every other place. They lived next door. Our kids, who were all very little growing up there, used to refer to them as the naughty boys, which was quite a polite way of describing the occasional violence and drugs and drinks and so on that happened there. I can remember once, as I was packing the car outside, sounds of an enormous row came through the door. You know, the kind of language that if I'd had one of those BBC bleep machines would have been on automatic fire at the time. And the front door opened, and amongst the effing and blinding, this young lad came out, slammed the door behind him the way any good angry teenager does, stomped down the two steps and the sort of 3 yards of path, and then stopped as he saw the dustbin just on the pavement. And he picked the dustbin up in his anger and hurled it at the front window. It just sort of made it, hit it, and did no damage, fell into the basement beneath, and he saw this concrete slab, and he tried to pick that up, obviously trying to throw that through the window, but he could hardly lift it, and finally he lets drop, staggers back exhausted to the front door, and the last I saw of him, he's there, propped against the front door, his finger leaning on the bell. Now, the big question, you see, is not, would he go back? That was obvious. The real question is, would they have him back? Alienated. Enemies. Evil behavior. The big question is not about what we make of God. What does God make of us? Read on verse 22. But now, God has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death. Will God have us back? A resounding and staggering yes. But now, by giving himself completely at the cross, actually dying for you, God brought you over to his side. In some way, that death on the cross is the key that allows you, me, and any of us to come home. Jesus is dying for us is God's pass that enables us to connect, to open the gates, to get on the tube. I guess you'd call it the freedom pass. I mean, if it was transport for Londoners, of course, you've got to be over 60 and resident in London, and then you get free transport everywhere. Transport for Christ, there are no age limits. No residency qualifications, no nationality restrictions, all fares paid. Yeah, the freedom pass. Eddie works as a garage mechanic in East London. But he's one of those guys who actually loved people more than he did cars, so he changed jobs and became a policeman in Northern Ireland during the Troubles. Wasn't exactly a safe move as far as his family was concerned. Eddie wasn't a Christian. I mean, he thought about God from time to time, as many people do, but tended to just park those thoughts. As he put it, the police force was a macho world, and being Christian wasn't very macho. One day he was caught up in a terrorist attack. He was shot 5 times. One bullet lodged within an inch of his heart. But he recovered enough to go back to work. It was 3 years or more later before Eddie became a Christian. It made quite a change. Actually, Eddie's two girls grew up never knowing that he'd been involved and nearly killed in this terrorist attack. Here's why. He said this, I didn't want the girls to grow up narrow in their views. It's only when a lady came to our home and mentioned it that I thought I had to tell them, and they were in their late teens by then. He said this as well, though. He said, I know who shot me. He's not been convicted for the crime. If I ever met him, I'd be prepared to have a cup of coffee and chat with him. I'd ask him why he did what he did. And Eddie went on, then I'd say, you've told me what you did to me. Now let me tell you what Christ has done for me. What you did to me. What Christ has done for me. Let me tell you the value of this freedom pass that reconciles us to God. I know even when people work this out, many are still anxious about what the journey will be like. Let me give you a few pointers. The you in these verses are plural. You'll not be on your own on it. You'll find many others in the tube with you. And because alienation looks different, it's as if folk get on at lots of different stations, so to speak. Some are more experienced travelers than others. Like everyone else, we have our good days and our bad days. But even on our bad days, we can probably do friendship and welcome a little better than you normally get in a tube carriage. I mean, you know that the original tube trains didn't have any windows. The carriages were known as padded cells. Not much had changed. And we're all heading for the same destination. See, look back at verse 22. But now, he's reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish, and free from accusation. Look, listen to this distinction. It's at the heart of so many of our struggles to find meaning in life. The distinction between what's a good life and what's a good person. Here's how one person put it. We live in the tension between our desire to have the good life and our desire to be good people. A fascinating place to see this tension on display is to open up a newspaper and compare advertisements with obituaries. Ads tell us, here's how to have great hair, great teeth, great clothes, great food, great sex, great cars, and great bodies. But obituaries never seem to say, he had great hair, great teeth, great clothes, great food, great sex, great cars, and a great body. We want to be good people, but we're willing to give it up to have the good life. We want to have what's offered in the ads, but we want to be what's spoken of in the obituaries. Well, as Christ gives me purpose and destiny, I find I'm traveling with him not to the good life of the advertisements, but to being the good person. I mean, look again at where he's heading. To present you holy in his sight, without blemish, free from accusation. You. Me. I mean, can you imagine it? Free from accusation. I don't know what you've done. You do. What could you fairly be accused of at work? In your personal life. It may be the secret nobody else knows, not your children, not your parents, not your partner, not your boss. Oh, it may not haunt you all the time, it rarely does for people, but there's just the occasional shudder as you think, oh, what if that came out? You know, and if I started to name you this morning, you know, I accuse David, I accuse Mary, of you'd be out of your seats and out of the church straight away. But you see what he's saying here? In God's presence, I won't start the sentence, never mind finish it. Jesus will be saying, no, no, I died for him, I died for her. God will say, case dismissed. The ultimate Crown Prosecution Service will say, no charges brought. Free from accusation. I mean, to be able to live with that confidence. But forgive me, I'm getting ahead of myself. See, all of this is for those who are on the journey, who are using their Freedom Pass. And just like Transport for London, Freedom Passes need to be personalised. With Transport for London, you need a photo. With Transport for Christ, you may not need a photo, but you do need to make it your own. What is the meaning of life? To travel with Christ. Oh, I know, it's not the neat philosophical package someone is looking for, but hey, that isn't always the answer to the big questions in life, and relationships don't work in neat philosophical packages. What is the meaning of life? To travel with Christ, to know the Lord of life, to be caught up in his purposes. What's the question this morning? Will you join us on the journey? Will you join us on the journey? Will you be there? As we draw to a close, as we pause to do what London life so rarely allows us to do, stop and think. Will you personalize your Freedom Pass? Front up to God and say, sorry for ignoring you. Thank you that you died to reconcile me to yourself. Please, please, may I travel with you as the Lord of my life. Yeah, as we sit back, as we watch, as we listen to Be My Everything, will you personalize your Freedom Pass?